This is the SF Productions Podcast Network. How I Got My Wife to Read Comics, Episode 225. Can a comic collector of over 25 years get his wife to read them? Will she let him keep them? Learn more in this podcast. Let's go to the comic book lounge with Mindy and Mark.
Gem World returns to the DCU. Billy Batson may not have been the best choice. Babs Origin Redux, ditto for the shade, just a regular day for a red shirt, and a Fables downer. This is How I Got My Wife to Read Comics for Sunday, September 23rd, 2012. I'm Mark.
And I'm Mindy. Just a reminder, you can go to sfpodcastnetwork.com to get the feed, other SF podcasts and blogs, or you can subscribe via iTunes where you can leave us a review.
And you can email sfpodcastnetwork@gmail.com, like us at facebook.com/sfppn, follow us on Twitter @sfppn, or call us at 614-321-9737. That's 614-321-9SFP. Well, we're working with a little bit of a handicap today because we're without internet right now.
Oh, my gosh.
We're actually having to work from paper, so if you hear some rustling.
Yes. We have notes today.
It's like old-timey radio.
Yes, and we're going to post the show from a Panera Bakery.
Yeah.
Oh.
And we've got 2 weeks to cover, so let's get started with Sword and Sorcery, number 0 by Marx, Lepestre, Bedond, and Zeiss. So they're bringing Amethyst back to the DCU. Now, we actually talked about her in one of the Magic episodes recently, but I'll just do a quick recap here. First appearance, Legion of Superheroes, number 298, 1983. And then she had a very rocky history in terms of publication. It was followed by a 12-issue miniseries, 83 to 84. There was a 1984 annual. Then there was a 16-issue regular series from 84 to 86, and then a 1986 special, and then a 4-issue miniseries in 1986.
So was it all set in the Legion future then?
No. Later there's a tie-in to it, but it actually started as like a preview in that LSH issue.
Oh, okay.
So it was a separate preview. And it was originally geared for younger female readers, kind of a pre-Minx type thing. And it went darker as it went along. So it's all about this orphan princess from Gem World, this other dimension who's hidden on Earth so that she isn't killed. And she's then brought back to Gem World at age 13. There's a lot of wizardry and soap opera stuff follows. We later learn that she's actually a Lord of Order, and so it gets into that whole order and chaos thing. Mordru gets involved at one point, and that's the tie-in to Legion of Superheroes, I believe, because Mordru is mostly considered a Legion villain.
Right.
And then she ends up having cameos in both Infinite Crisis and in Day of Vengeance, but otherwise pretty much disappears. So now, in this reboot, she's a young girl who has a single mom. The single mom, we learn, is actually the queen of Gem World. And this girl really doesn't fit in at school, which is what you kind of expect of any of these characters. That's kind of a trope, as it were. So the mom's been training her in combat for some reason, which she won't explain, just that you're going to need it. So like hand-to-hand combat. And says that, I'll explain everything on your 17th birthday.
Yeah, we're going to go to your, you know, to home where you were born, where, you know, our families are from on your 17th birthday.
Right.
But she doesn't know it's an alternate dimension.
Right.
Or another world.
So here it is, her 17th birthday. And so mom takes her back to Gem World. And Constantine makes an appearance at the end of the issue. So it seems like this is going to tie into the Dark series.
Right. Which you sort of expect, I think, being a
magic-related
magic comic. I really like these comics that have, like, the little, I'm going to call them pocket worlds, almost. They're in the DCU, but they're not really a part of the regular continuity, like Clarion, the Witch Boy, and this one.
Yeah, in fact, that's one of the reasons I'm looking forward to, if it ever gets published, Multiversity. they've been talking about forever. It would be nice to ever see that. So there's also a Beowulf backup story. And Beowulf, unless I'm mistaken, has never really been talked about in DC other than there was a graphic novel miniseries called Gilgamesh 2. Yeah. I mean, other than that, I don't remember them talking about Beowulf as a character.
Well, it seemed like he was maybe stranded or... it was hard to tell where this was taking place or when.
Well, it apparently is in the future.
Right.
Because there's all these references to
old military tech.
Right. It almost seemed Commandy-like in a way.
Yeah.
I wonder if this is a backdoor way to bring Commandy back in. I don't know. This title may actually change the lead over time because it's the title on the cover is Sword of Sorcery featuring Amethyst.
Right. So it could switch to somebody else for a while and come back to Amethyst.
Yeah. We'll see. Justice League number 0 by Johns, Frank, and Van Sciver. So after several months of teasing and little tiny stories where very little happens in each little mini backup story, we finally get a whole issue and we finally get to Shazam! So Billy Batson's wandering around the Rock of Eternity, which is where we kind of left him in one of the last backup issues. And he runs into the statues of the seven deadly sins, which are now like holograms, and ends up playing with them, like turning them on and off, because he's a kid. And runs into the wizard, who, as we suspected, is one of the cabal of wizards that was introduced in the Free Comic Book Day. But now he's very old, and he needs to hand this off to somebody, this responsibility. He's not really impressed with Billy and says, well, he's not really pure of heart, but he has the spark of pure of heartness, I guess. The wizard's dying, so he doesn't really have much choice but to give this power to Billy. Once he becomes Shazam, he doesn't seem to have the wisdom of Solomon. He's still acting like a kid.
Yeah.
Which is not the way they've really played it, at least traditionally. Now, I know when there was a kid's version, the Johnny DC series, where they did Shazam. I'm really having trouble saying Shazam and not Captain Marvel. It was basically playing Captain Marvel that he was still Billy in terms of intelligence and in terms of wisdom. I don't know if I really like this view in terms of a non-kid series. Billy gets the power. He leaves the Rock of Eternity and returns to Freddy. And then they start pulling pranks. But he ends up accidentally, really, saving this girl from a robber. And then ends up asking for a tip, essentially,
yeah,
for doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And the last panel is Freddy going, we're going to be rich.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that. And there certainly wasn't much Justice League in this story, was there?
There was zero Justice League in this story. It was just him. But we do know that Captain Marvel is going to join Justice League. That's coming up.
Well, I can't see how, as he is now, the Justice League would want him.
Right. Yeah, you'd think that something's going to have to happen. The Wisdom of Solomon's going to have to kick in at some point. There's also a backup story with Pandora, where we don't really learn too much about her still. The wizard, the same wizard, appears before her, and I'm guessing this occurred right before the main story, and that's why the wizard disappears. He has to go back to find out who got into the Rock of Eternity. I don't know. He tells her that the council was foolish and wrong to have given her this terrible sentence because she opened Pandora's box. The main point of this is, at the end, we cut to modern day somewhere in some city, and we cut to a mysterious figure that, based on the name of the issue, we have to kind of assume is the new question.
Right.
So, but it's literally like one page, and we're out. So it's another character they're going to introduce, and really nothing new about Pandora. They'd certainly indicated that she was going to have this major part, I'm guessing, maybe in Trinity War. I don't know. But they certainly introduced her like, oh, she's going to be this major player, because in the first issues of the New 52, she was in cameos, in some cases in a background scene in many of those issues, indicating, ooh, who's this mysterious person?
I just think this indicates they don't know what they're doing at DC.
That's a good bet. That's a good bet.
You know what I was thinking is that the question who left the question mark on the guy on the lamppost,
mm-hmm.
it looks like the Riddler's question mark. I would have thought the Riddler if I was the police.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Of course, maybe there is no Riddler here.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if they've introduced Riddler to the new DCU, but also it's not Gotham City. At least it's not indicated as Gotham City.
Well, that's true, too.
Oh.
We don't know where it is.
Yeah. Batgirl number 0 by Simone and Bennis. So we get a revised origin story of Barbara Gordon. And we see her as a young college student. She's taking a tour of Gotham City Police Department as part of her college studies. And James Jr. comes along. Why did James Jr. get jumped over to the new DCU? I was hoping we'd leave him in the pre-continuity.
Yeah, well.
It's a bad idea. And she sees this police team that are basically trying to figure out what the deal is with this Batman character. So they've reconstructed what they believe is his outfit and basically saying that, you know, he's no supernatural creature. He's just a guy with tech. Then this murder suspect is brought in, this huge guy, and these Canadian terrorists, huh? I really never think of Canadians as terrorists. But
they make a joke about that.
Right.
But it seems that this guy may be some sort of a cult leader.
Right.
And what I found interesting about him was he recognized that James was a bad kid
from
the beginning.
It. Yeah, he could just see it. So these terrorists break in, and there's havoc. And Babs ends up throwing on this faux Batman outfit, and she ends up taking out the big guy. And then Bruce arrives, not in time to save her because she saves herself, and just kind of comments, nice work. And then we end up seeing Babs as she goes forward in a couple shots in what is essentially the classic Batgirl costume, the gray with the yellow with the yellow symbol, but it's mostly a gray outfit. But she has a domino mask, which we've never seen in this continuity. And that actually reminded me, they did an Elseworlds called Thrill Killer, again, back in the 90s. And she had an outfit kind of similar to that. And then the last scene we get to is the Joker standing at her door, ready to shoot her. So that goes into the Killing Joke.
Right. They also, I just want to say that Canadian murderer guy was killed in the police station.
Right.
Probably by James, don't you think?
I would assume.
So that was interesting little tidbit also.
Right. Interested to see that there were surprisingly few Brokeback poses from Ed Benes. I went through the whole issue. There are very few shots that are like, no woman could actually contort that way. So I don't know if somebody at DC kind of said, hey, you need to tone it down a bit. I don't know.
Yeah.
But he's traditionally known for that. The Shade, number 12 of 12 by Robinson and Ha. So we finally get Shade's origin story as a Times Past story. We're in 1838 with Richard Swift and his kind of bucolic family. He adores his wife. He's running this importing business in London and is friends with Charles Dickens. And at various points, they chat about story ideas. And this new customer shows up at the importing business, Simon Culp, who for whatever reason wants to get a live lion. And it turns out he wants it for this dark sacrifice he's going to do because he wants to gain all this demonic power. But he ends up screwing up the spell. So the darkness that is generated by this spell ends up entering Richard Swift. And his life as he knows it kind of ends that day, because he becomes the Shade and he's no longer human. And he kind of just instinctively uses the shadows to stop Culp and to save Charles Dickens.
And then goes on to become a criminal.
Right.
Oh, well.
Yeah. This was not the best wind-up. I was hoping for something a little more interesting as the Shade's origin, because we've never really seen the Shade's origin before. This wasn't the best ending, but I would say if you didn't pick up this series, be sure to pick up the trade, because the other issues were actually very good.
I liked the whole thing, I think.
Yeah. Star Trek number 13 from IDW by Johnson and Molnar. So we get a different take on the Apple episode of the original series. And this is the whole one with villagers who all have to feed Vol. And it turns out Vol's like this planetary engine that's keeping everybody safe, if you remember that episode at all.
Vaguely.
All the villagers had white hair and kind of were albino looking, if you remember that at all.
Mm-hmm.
But we get all of this from the perspective of a red shirt on the ship. And this guy's the bruiser from the movie, the guy that Kirk has a fight with in the bar before he decides to join Starfleet. And as we know in the movie, he ends up getting on the crew of the Enterprise along with Kirk. This issue really does tie into the movie even more than maybe previous issues. There were a lot of callbacks to the movie.
There were.
And it almost seemed like a jump-on point for the comic. Although, frankly, I don't think you need one.
No, I don't think so.
If you've ever watched the original series, and if you watch the new movie, that's pretty much all you need to know. So he and Spock get hit with these deadly spores. And in a twist from what happened in the original series, Spock's blood ends up saving him, the red shirt. And in the end, he just considers it to be an honor to be a red shirt, despite all the ribbing and people give him about, oh, geez, you're going to get killed.
And in the original episode, all of the red shirt people who went down pretty much die.
Right.
And in this one, they go through how they were all saved because of certain things. And it seems like on the new Enterprise, the red shirts aren't going to be the sacrifices that they were.
I would hope so.
On the TV
show.
You're
going to go through a lot of crew otherwise.
Although they do talk about how on another ship, these people seem to be dying.
Mm.
And it kind of reminded me, I'm going to harp again on that book by John Scalzi, the Red Shirts book.
Mm-hmm.
I really think that was a really good story. And if you like Star Trek and this idea of the red shirts and everything and explaining why this happens, that's a good book.
Fables 121 from Vertigo. So this is the conclusion to Cubs in Toyland. So Therese, again, this is all talking about the children of Snow White and Bigby. And that's basically all this story is about. So Therese goes to find Darian and find out what happened to him and ends up finding this cauldron on the beach with this delicious broth that can be whatever flavor you want it to be, kind of.
It seems to change day by day. It's a never-ending cauldron of food for Therese, and she can, you know, have something different to eat every day.
And as we know from the previous issue, Darian had sacrificed himself to save her. It basically had used this cauldron to generate this spell where otherwise he knew she was going to die from lack of food, and he sacrifices himself. Now, I kind of assumed that, okay, somehow we're going to have a way to resolve this.
Yes.
And really didn't. Darian's dead. She broods for quite a while to the point where she's now an adult. She decides she needs to move on and she wants to save the toys, but decides they have to serve penance first. And to do so, they must return to the Mundi world and save 100 kids each.
So for each of life they took.
Once they've done that, and they do that through the little toy boat that becomes the big boat, and they just go back and forth, and this takes a long time. But they eventually do this, and Toyland's restored. Therese turns to her family, in which we learn that very little time has actually gone by in the Fables continuity.
Right. So while it's been years for Therese, it may have only been months for Snow. The other kids are still, in fact, kids.
Right. So it is a rather downer ending, certainly.
But, you know, sometimes that happens in Fables because we still have Boy Blue dead.
Right. Then there's the backup story, and even for these backup stories, very little happens in this particular item. It's like, there's a fight, and they're going to have another fight. The end.
Yes, that's it.
I would prefer a backup story to have at least a little bit of actual story, that at least move the storyline along. I understand you only got a few pages to do it, but...
Well, maybe it was just such a intense ending for Babes in Toyland that they didn't want to do much else.
That's possible. All right, before we get out of here, it's time to play America's fastest growing new game show.
Guess who's on the cover of Entertainment Weekly? Okay, so are you ready, Mark?
I am ready.
All right, go.
TV related?
Yes.
Is it the Emmy issue?
No.
We've already gone past the fall preview issue, I think.
Yes.
Okay. Is it one person on the cover?
No.
Multiple people on the cover?
Yes.
Is it multiple people from the same show?
Yes.
And so it's a cast of a show?
It is.
Okay. Is it on one of the three major networks?
Yes.
Okay. Is it on NBC?
No.
Is it on ABC?
I think it is, but I'm not positive.
Okay. Is it a new show?
No.
Okay. Returning series. Is it two people on the cover?
No.
Three?
No.
Four?
No.
Five?
Yes.
Okay. Five people on the cover. And it's a returning show. We think it's on ABC. Is it a comedy?
Yes.
Is it Modern Family?
No. So maybe it's on CBS.
Okay. Okay, if it's CBS, is it a sitcom?
Yes. Well, it was a sitcom before, so why wouldn't it be a sitcom now?
Oh, I suppose. Let's see. Okay.
I think the obvious question is it a show we watch?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Yes.
Okay. So it's not Two and a Half Men?
No.
Is it How I Met Your Mother?
No.
Okay.
Maybe it's on NBC, but I don't think so. I'm going to give you an extra 10 or 15 seconds.
I would hope. It's not hard to...
I don't know. You make me watch everything on TiVo, and then I never see a commercial. So how am I supposed to know what network it's on?
Okay, it's a show we watch.
All right, I'm going to pause the timer for just a minute.
Okay.
Like, you can have 10 seconds now.
Okay, let me assume then it's NBC. Because I don't think we watch too many sitcoms on CBS, other than How I Met Your Mother. Nope, that's about it. So it's almost got to be NBC. So is it Parks and Rec?
No.
Is it Office?
No.
Is it Community?
No.
It's a returning show.
It's a returning show.
And it's a sitcom.
And it's a sitcom. All right. Ask about the sex of the people on the cover.
Okay. Is it all men?
No.
Is it all women?
No.
It's mixed.
Yes.
Okay, that doesn't help me much.
There's one girl and four boys. Now I'm starting it again. You have 19
one
seconds.
One girl. Is it New Girl?
No.
Okay, so it's not Fox. I just wanted to guess.
I knew it wasn't Fox.
One girl... No, I don't know.
Well, duh. It was the Big Bang Theory.
Oh, it was all over the map there.
Duh.
Duh.
Sorry. What network is it on?
It is CBS.
Well, see?
Okay.
You misled me.
Yeah. Oh, I misled
yes,
you.
Yes, because, oh, we don't watch anything on CBS. Well, we do. You misled me.
All right. Want to remind you to go to sfpodcastnetwork.com to get the feed, other SF podcasts and blogs, including my Star Trek Next Generation and Justice League animated series reviews. You can subscribe via iTunes and please leave us a review.
If we would have had the internet, I could have looked up what network the TV show was on before we played Who's on the Cover.
That's true.
I want to point that out.
Yes.
You can email
SFPodcastNetwork.
You can email sfpodcastnetwork@gmail.com, like us at facebook.com/sfppn, follow us on Twitter at sfppn, or call us at 614-321-9737. That's 614-321-9SFP.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Bye.
Bye-bye.